Chapter 10. It was full dark by the time Kabarak brought the ship to ground in his village, a tight-grouped cluster of huts with brightly lit windows.
"Do ships land here often?"
Leia asked, as Kabarak pointed the ship toward a shadowy structure standing apart near the center of the village. In the glare of the landing lights, the shadow became a large cylindrical building with a flat cone-shaped roof, the circular wall composed of massive vertical wooden pillars alternating with a lighter, shimmery wood. Just beneath the eaves, she caught a glint of a metal band encircling the entire building.
"It is not common,"
Kabarak said, cutting the repulsor lifts and running the ship's systems down to standby.
"Neither is it unheard of."
In other words, it was probably going to attract a fair amount of attention. Chewbacca, who had recovered enough for Leia to help into one of the cockpit passenger seats, was obviously thinking along the same lines.
"The villagers are all close family of the clan Kimbar,"
Kabarak said in answer to the Wookiee's slightly slurred question.
"They will accept my promise of protection as their own. Come."
Leia unstrapped and stood up, suppressing a grimace as she did so. But they were here now, and she could only hope that Kabarak's confidence was more than just the unfounded idealism of youth. She helped Chewbacca unstrap, and together they followed the Nogri back toward the main hatchway, collecting 3PO from her cabin on the way.
"I must go first,"
Kabarak said as they reached the exit.
"By custom, I must approach alone to the Dooka of the clan Kimbar upon arrival. By law, I'm required to announce out-clan visitors to the head of my family."
"I understand," Leia said, fighting back a fresh surge of uneasiness.
She didn't like this business of Kabarak having conversations with his fellow Nogri that she wasn't in on. Once again, there wasn't a lot she could do about it.
"We'll wait here until you come and get us."
"I will be quick,"
Kabarak promised. He palmed the door release twice, slipping outside as the panel slid open and then shut again. Chewbacca growled something unintelligible under his breath.
"He'll be back soon,"
Leia soothed him, making a guess as to what was bothering the Wookiee.
"I'm certain he's telling the truth,"
3PO added helpfully.
"Customs and rituals of this sort are very common among more socially primitive pre-spaceflight cultures."
"Except that this culture isn't pre-spaceflight,"
Leia pointed out, her hand playing restlessly with the grip of her lightsaber as she stared at the closed hatchway in front of her. Kabarak could at least have left the door open so they would be able to see when he was coming back. Unless, of course, he didn't want them to see when he was coming back.
"That is evident, Your Highness. I feel certain, however, that their status in that regard has been changed only Well...
He broke off as Chewbacca abruptly pushed past him and lumbered back toward the center of the ship.
"Where are you going?"
Leia called after the Wookiee. His only reply was some comment about the Imperials that she wasn't quite able to catch.
"Chewie, get back here,"
she snapped.
"Kabarak will be back any minute."
This time, the Wookiee didn't bother to answer.
"Great,"
Leia muttered, trying to decide what to do. If Kabarak came back and found Chewbacca gone, but if he came back and found both of them gone?
"As I was saying,"
3PO went on, apparently deciding that the actions of rude Wookiees were better left ignored.
"All evidence I have gathered so far about this culture indicates that they were, until recently, a non-spacefaring people. Kabarak's reference to the Dooka, obviously a clan center of some sort, the familial and clan structures themselves, plus this whole preoccupation with your perceived royal status."
"The High Court of Alderaan had a royal hierarchy too,"
Leia reminded him tartly, still looking back along the empty corridor. No, she decided she and 3PO had better stay here and wait for Kabarak.
"Most other people in the galaxy didn't consider us to be socially primitive."
"No, of course not,"
3PO said, sounding a little embarrassed.
"I didn't mean to imply any such thing."
"I know,"
Leia assured him, a little embarrassed herself at jumping on 3PO like that.
she'd known what he meant.
Where is he, anyway?
The question had been rhetorical, but even as she voiced it, the hatchway abruptly slid open again.
Come,
Kabarak said. His dark eyes flicked over Leia and 3PO.
Where is the Wookiee?
He went back into the ship, Leia told him. I don't know why. Do you want me to go and find him?
Kabarak made a sound halfway between a hiss and a purr.
There is no time, he said. The Matriarch is waiting. Come.
Turning, he started back down the ramp.
Any idea how long it will take you to pick up the language?
Leia asked 3PO as they followed.
I really cannot say, Your Highness,
the droid answered, as Kabarak led them across a dirt courtyard past the large wooden building they'd seen on landing. The Clan Duca, Leia decided. One of the smaller structures beyond it seemed to be their goal.
Learning an entirely new language would be difficult indeed. However, if it is similar to any of the 6 million forms of communication with which I am familiar...
I understand.
Leia cut him off. They were almost to the lighted building now, and as they approached, a pair of short Nogri standing in the shadows pulled open the double doors for them. Taking a deep breath, Leia followed Kabarak inside. From the amount of light coming through the windows, she would have expected the building's interior to be uncomfortably bright. To her surprise, the room they entered was actually darker than it had been immediately outside. A glance to the side showed why. The brightly lit windows were in fact standard self-powered lighting panels, with the operational sides facing outward. Except for a small amount of spillage from the panels, the interior of the building was lit only by a pair of floating wick lamps. 3PO's assessment of the society echoed through her mind. Apparently, he'd known what he was talking about. In the center of the room, standing silently in a row facing her, were 5 Nogri. Leia swallowed hard, sensing somehow that the first word should be theirs. Kabarak stepped to the Nogri in the center and dropped to his knees, ducking his head to the floor and splaying out his hands to his sides. The same gesture of respect, she remembered, that he'd extended to her back in the Kashyyyk holding cell.
Ilirush, Miluxvorlai,
he said.
Mila Tarasiv, Malari Ush, Vira Veda Ush.
Can you understand it?
Leia murmured to 3PO.
To a degree. It appears to be a dialect of the ancient trade language.
Shava!
The Nogri in the center of the line spat. 3PO recoiled.
She said, quiet,
he translated unnecessarily.
I understood the gist,
Leia said, drawing herself up and bringing the full weight of her royal Alderaanian court upbringing to bear on the aliens facing her. Deference to local custom and authority was all well and good, but she was the daughter of their lord, Darth Vader, and there were certain discourtesies that such a person should not put up with.
Is this how you speak to the Malari Ush?
She demanded. 6 Nogri heads snapped over to look at her. Reaching out with the Force, Leia tried to read the sense behind those gazes. But as always, this particular alien mind seemed totally closed to her. She was going to have to play it by ear.
I asked a question,
she said into the silence. The Nogri in the center took a step forward. And with the motion, Leia noticed for the first time the 2 small hard bumps on the alien's upper chest beneath the loose tunic. A female?
Matriarch?
She murmured to 3PO, remembering the word Kabarak had used earlier.
A female who is leader of a local family or subclan structure,
the droid translated, his voice nervous and almost too low to hear. 3PO hated being yelled at.
Thank you,
Leia said, eyeing the Nogri.
You are the Matriarch of this family.
I am she,
the Nogri said in a heavily accented but understandable basic.
What proof do you offer to your claim of Malari Ush?
Silently, Leia held out her hand. The Matriarch hesitated, then stepped up to her and gingerly sniffed it.
Is it not as I said?
Kabarak asked.
Be silent, third son,
the Matrax said, raising her head to stare into Leia's eyes.
I greet you, Lady Vader, but I do not welcome you.
Leia held her gaze steadily. She could still not sense anything from any of the aliens, but with her thoughts extended, she could tell that Chewbacca had left the ship and was approaching the house, approaching rather rapidly and with a definite agitation about him. She hoped he wouldn't charge brashly in and ruin what little civility remained here.
May I ask why not? She asked the Matrak.
Did you serve the Emperor?
The other countered.
Do you now serve our Lord, the Grand Admiral?
No to both questions, Leia told her.
Then you bring discord and poison among us,
the Matrak concluded darkly.
Discord between what was and what now is.
She shook her head.
We do not need more discord on Hunniker, Lady Vader.
The words were barely out of her mouth when the doors behind Leia swung open again and Chewbacca strode into the room. The Matrak started at the sight of the Wookiee, and one of the other Nogri uttered something startled sounding, but any further reactions were cut off by Chewbacca's snarled warning.
Are you sure they're Imperials?
Leia asked, a cold fist clutching her heart.
No, she pleaded silently. Not now. Not yet.
The Wookiee growled the obvious, that a pair of Lambda-class shuttles coming from orbit and from the direction of the city of Nisteo could hardly be anything else. Kabarak moved up beside the Matrak, said something urgently in his own language.
He says he has sworn protection to us. He asks that the pledge be honored.
For a long moment, Leia thought the Matrak was going to refuse. Then, with a sigh, she bowed her head slightly.
Come with me,
Kabarak said to Leia, brushing past her and Chewbacca to the door.
The Matrak has agreed to hide you from our Lord the Grand Admiral, at least for now.
Where are we going? Leia asked as they followed him out into the night.
Your droid and your analysis equipment I will hide among the decon droids that are stored for the night in an outer shed,
the Nogri explained, pointing to a windowless building 50 meters away.
You and the Wookiee will be more of a problem. If the Imperials have sensor equipment with them, your life sign profiles will register as different from Nogri.
I know,
Leia said, searching the sky for the shuttle's running lights and trying to remember everything she could about life form identification algorithms.
Heart rate was one of the parameters she knew, as were ambient atmosphere, respiratory byproducts, and molecule chain EM polarization effects. But the chief long-range parameter was...
We need a heat source, she told Kabarak. As big a one as possible.
The bakehouse,
the Nogri said, pointing to a windowless building 3 down from where they stood. At its back was a squat chimney from which wisps of smoke could be seen curling upward in the backwash of light from the surrounding structures.
Sounds like our best chance, Leia agreed. Kabarak, you hide 3PO. Chewie, come with me.
The Nogri were waiting for them as they stepped from the shuttle. 3 females standing side by side, with 2 children acting as honor wardens by the doors of the Clan Duca building. Thrawn glanced at the group, threw an evaluating sweep around the area, and then turned to Pelion.
Wait here until the tech team arrives, Captain,
he ordered Pelion quietly.
Get them started on a check of the communications and countermeasures equipment in the ship over there. Then join me inside.
Yes, sir.
Thrawn turned to Urkheim.
Dynast,
he invited, gesturing at the waiting Nogri. The Dynast bowed and strode toward them. Thrawn threw a glance at Rook, who'd taken Urkheim's former position at the Grand Admiral's side, and together they followed. There was the usual welcoming ritual, and then the females led the way into the Duca. The shuttle from Chimera was only a couple of minutes behind them. Pelion briefed the tech team and got them busy, then crossed to the Duca and went in. He'd expected that the Matrak would have managed to round up perhaps a handful of her people for this impromptu late-evening visit by their glorious lord and master. To his surprise, he found that the old girl had in fact turned out half the village. There was a double row of them, children as well as adults, lining the Duca walls from the huge genealogy wall chart back to the double doors and around again to the meditation booth opposite the chart. Thrawn was seated in the clan high seat, two-thirds of the way to the back of the room, with Erchaim standing again at his side. The three females who'd met the shuttle stood facing them with a second tier of elders another pace back. Standing with the females, his steel gray skin, a marked contrast to their older, darker gray, was a young Nogri male. Pelion had apparently missed nothing more important than a smattering of the nonsense ritual the Nogri never seemed to get enough of. As he moved past the silent lines of aliens to stand at Thrawn's other side, the young male stepped forward and knelt before the high seat.
"I greet you, my lord,"
he mewed gravely, spreading his arms out to his sides.
"You honor my family and the clan Kimbar with your presence here."
"You may rise," Thrawn told him. "You are Kabarak, clan Kimbar?"
"I am, my lord."
"You were once a member of the Imperial Nogri Commando Team 22, Thrawn said. "A team that ceased to exist on the planet Kashyyyk. Tell me what happened."
Kabarak might have twitched. Pelion couldn't tell for sure.
"I filed a report, my lord, immediately upon leaving that world."
"Yes, I read the report," Thrawn told him coolly. "Read it very carefully, and noted the questions it left unanswered. Such as how and why you survived when all others in your team were killed. And how it was you were able to escape when the entire planet had been alerted to your presence. And why you did not return immediately to either Honegger or one of our other bases after your failure."
This time there was definitely a twitch, possibly a reaction to the word failure.
"I was left unconscious by the Wookiees during the first attack,"
Kabarak said.
"I awakened alone and made my way back to the ship. Once there, I deduced what had happened to the rest of the team from official information sources. I suspect they simply were unprepared for the speed and stealth of my ship when I made my escape. As to my whereabouts afterward, my lord,"
he hesitated,
"I transmitted my report and then left for a time to be alone."
"Why?"
"To think, my lord, and to meditate."
"Wouldn't Honegger have been a more suitable place for such meditation?" Thrawn asked, waving a hand around the Duca.
"I had much to think about, my lord."
For a moment, Thrawn eyed him thoughtfully.
"You were slow to respond when the request for a recognition signal came from the surface," he said. "You then refused to land at the Nisteo port facilities."
"I did not refuse, my lord. I was never ordered to land there."
"The distinction is noted," Thrawn said dryly. "Tell me why you chose to come here instead."
"I wished to speak with my Matrak, to discuss my meditations with her, and to ask forgiveness for my failure."
"And have you done so?"
Thrawn asked, turning to face the Matrak.
"We have begun,"
she said in atrociously mangled Basic.
"We have not finished."
At the back of the room, the Duca doors swung open, and one of the tech team stepped inside.
"You have a report, Ensign," Thrawn called to him.
"Yes, Admiral,"
the other said, crossing the room and stepping somewhat gingerly around the assembled group of Nogri elders. We finished our preliminary set of comm and countermeasures tests, sir, as per orders. Thrawn shifted his gaze to Kabarak.
And?
We think we've located the malfunction, sir. The main transmitter coil seems to have overloaded and backfed into a dump capacitor, damaging several nearby circuits. The compensator computer rebuilt the pathway, but the bypass was close enough to one of the static damping command lines for the resulting inductance surge to trigger it.
An interesting set of coincidences, Thrawn said, his glowing eyes still on Kabarak. A natural malfunction, do you think? Or an artificial one?
The Matrax stirred, as if about to say something. Thrawn looked at her, and she subsided. Impossible to say, sir, the tech said, choosing his words carefully. Obviously, he hadn't missed the fact that this was skating him close to the edge of insult in the middle of a group of Nogri who might decide to take offense at it. Someone who knew what he was doing could probably have pulled it off. I have to say, though, sir, that compensator computers in general have a pretty low reputation among mechanics. They're okay on the really serious stuff that can get unskilled pilots into big trouble, but on non-critical reroutes like this one, they've always had a tendency to foul up something else along the way.
Thank you.
If Thrawn was annoyed that he hadn't caught Kabarak red-handed in a lie, it didn't show in his face.
Your team will take the ship back to Nisteo for repairs.
Yes, sir. The tech saluted and left. Thrawn looked back at Kabarak.
With your team destroyed, you will of course have to be reassigned, he said. When your ship has been repaired, you will fly it to the Volrar base in Glythe Sector and report there for duty.
Yes, my lord,
Kabarak said. Thrawn stood up.
You have much to be proud of here, he said, inclining his head slightly to the Matrak. Your family service to the Clan Kimbar and to the Empire will long be remembered by all of Honegger.
As will your leadership and protection of the Nogri people,
the Matrak responded. Flanked by Rook and Erchaim, Thrawn stepped down from the chair and headed back toward the double doors. Pelion took up the rear, and a minute later they were once again out in the chilly night air. The shuttle was standing ready, and without further comment or ritual, Thrawn led the way inside. As they lifted, Pelion caught just a glimpse out the viewport of the Nogri filing out of the Duca to watch their departing leaders.
Well, that was pleasant,
he muttered under his breath. Thrawn looked at him.
A waste of time, you think, Captain?
He asked mildly. Pelion glanced at Erchaim, seated farther toward the front of the shuttle. The Dynast didn't seem to be listening to them, but it would probably still pay to be tactful.
Diplomatically, sir, I'm sure it was worthwhile to demonstrate that you care about all of Honegger, including the outer villages,
he told Thrawn.
Given that the commando ship really had malfunctioned, I don't think anything else was gained.
Thrawn turned to stare out the side viewport.
I'm not so sure of that, Captain, he said. There's something not quite right back there. Rook, what's your reading of our young commando, Kabarak?
He was unsettled,
the bodyguard told him quietly.
That much I saw in his hands and his face.
Erchaim swiveled around in his chair.
It is a naturally unsettling experience to face the Lord of the Nogri,
he said.
Particularly when one's hands are wet with failure,
Rook countered. Erchaim half rose from his seat, and for a pair of heartbeats, the air between the two Nogri was thick with tension. Pelion felt himself pressing back in his seat cushions, the long and bloody history of Nogri clan rivalry flooding fresh into his consciousness.
This mission has generated several failures, Thrawn said calmly into the taut silence. In that, the Clan Kimbar hardly stands alone.
Slowly, Erchaim resumed his seat.
Kabarak is still young, he said.
He is indeed, Thrawn agreed. One reason, I presume, why he's such a bad liar. Rook, perhaps the Dynast Erchaim would enjoy the view from the forward section. Please escort him there.
Yes, my lord.
Rook stood up.
Dynasterheim,
he said, gesturing toward the forward blast door. For a moment, the other Nogri didn't move. Then, with obvious reluctance, he stood up.
My lord,
he said stiffly, and headed down the aisle. Thrawn waited until the door had closed on both aliens before turning back to Pelion.
Kabarak is hiding something, Captain, he said, a cold fire in his eyes. I'm certain of it.
Yes, sir,
Pelion said, wondering how the Grand Admiral had come to that conclusion. Certainly the routine sensor scan they'd just run hadn't picked up anything.
Shall I order a sensor focus on the village?
That's not what I meant.
Thrawn shook his head. He wouldn't have brought anything incriminating back to Honaker with him. You can't hide anything for long in one of these close-knit villages.
No.
It's something he's not telling us about that missing month.
The one where he claims he was off meditating by himself.
We might be able to learn something from his ship,
Pelion suggested.
Agreed,
Thrawn nodded. Have a scanning crew go over it before the techs get to work. Every cubic millimeter of it, interior and exterior both. And have surveillance put someone on Kabarak.
Ah, yes, sir,
Pelion said.
One of our people or another Nogri?
Thrawn cocked an eyebrow at him.
The ridiculously obvious or the heavily political, in other words?
He asked dryly.
Yes, you're right, of course. Let's try a third option.
Does the Chimera carry any espionage droids?
I don't believe so, sir,
Pelion said, punching up the question on the shuttle's computer link.
No, we have some Arrakid Viper probe droids, but nothing of the more compact espionage class.
Then we'll have to improvise, Thrawn said. Have engineering put a Viper motivator into a decon droid, and rig it with full-range optical and auditory sensors and a recorder. We'll have it put in with the group working out of Kabarak's village.
Yes, sir,
Pelion said, keying in the order.
Do you want a transmitter installed, too?
Thrawn shook his head.
No. A recorder should be sufficient. The antenna would be difficult to conceal from view. The last thing we want is for some curious Nogri to see it and wonder why this one was different.
Pelion nodded his understanding, especially since that might lead the aliens to start pulling decon droids apart for a look inside.
Yes, sir. I'll have the order placed right away.
Thrawn's glowing eyes shifted to look out the viewport.
There's no particular rush here, he said thoughtfully. Not now. This is the calm before the storm, Captain. And until the storm is ready to unleash, we might as well spend our time and energy making sure our illustrious Jedi Master will be willing to assist us when we want him.
Which means bringing Leia Organa Solo to him?
Exactly.
Thrawn looked at the forward blast door.
And if my presence is what the Nogri need to inspire them, then my presence is what they'll have.
For how long?
Pelion asked.
Thrawn smiled tightly. For as long as it takes.